It's Sunday night, and that means it's time for your wrestling nostalgia. This week, we're going back to WrestleMania 19. The final match of Stone Cold Steve Austin starts right after this. If you guys want to hear a different perspective on the landscape of professional wrestling, then go check out the J3X Show. The J3X Show is a wrestling podcast that's on all podcast hosting sites like Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. So if you want a fun but knowledgeable podcast to listen to at work or wherever, then go follow the J3X Show.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era. To the reality era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Sunday, August 25th, 2019. Welcome, everybody. One of my favorite shows of the week, where we get to dive into wrestling's past and remember why we love wrestling. Or, if you're somewhat new to the genre, this is an education for you, and I think it will reignite those who may have lost their passion and those who are still trying to find it. And this is just one of my favorite shows because I get to pick from my own brain, for better or worse, a moment in history that was significant and meant something to me. And I think most fans, I'm not picking some arbitrary thing, you know, I'm picking events that, again, that meant something to the wrestling industry and also meant something to me on a personal level because A lot of the wrestling I watched, you know, when I was younger, just connected with me on a personal level, right? Like, I think most of us can agree to that yes, it's a form of entertainment, but those of us that have a true connection with the product, it just formulates, like, who you are. It's weird, and I don't mean that in a way that's like, oh, well, you know, I take Stone Cold's character seriously. I'm going around, you know, swigging beer and flipping people off. No, right? Like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know, you take the fire that he has, you can relate to the passion that he has, and like, there's certain aspects and traits, but you don't take the character literally. But all right, well, so we're gonna get to WrestleMania 19, a card that is, wow, when I give you guys the card, don't go Wikipedia it, I will tell you it, unless you want to, and then you can follow along with me, but I'm going to be mostly focusing on Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Rocket, and this took place on March 30th, 2003, in Seattle, Washington, and so it has been a good, almost, well, 17, so 16 years since we have seen Stone Cold Steve Austin in a real match. Yes, he participated in many other side bits and stories and stunners, but this was his final true match in WWE. And I think if you've listened to this show before, you know that Stone Cold Steve Austin is a recurring theme on this show, and I know that he's a very popular choice in terms of who may be their favorite wrestler. Well, Stone Cold Steve Austin is on the top of a lot of people's lists, including my own. He may not be the most technically savvy or whatever, but he made the biggest impact in my estimation. So, yeah, I try not to repeat things, and I try to divvy things up. But this week, and as I was going through some potential candidates, this one really stuck out to me. And I remember you remember these moments live. I mean, time can pass, as much time as time wants to pass can pass, but you still will always remember where you were. You will remember who you were with and how you were feeling at that moment. It was just, it was a hell of a, this particular one was a hell of a moment. I was disappointed. During this time, we also were not as privy to the inside workings of WWE and professional wrestling in general. While we knew it was a work, social media was barely in its infancy stages. Facebook didn't even exist at this time. And I believe it was coming out. It came out in 2004, and they called it the Facebook. It was the Facebook. I mean, if you guys remember. So this is how far back that this match goes, and it's 16 years, but it feels like infinity because of all of the things that have happened since then, and the explosion of social media. And yes, there were wrestling websites, and you know the ones that we all know and love or hate. And so those mainstays were around, but they were the only real source of information for any of the inner workings of the business. And so you didn't have access to your fingertips. We still had flip phones back then. And we still had, you know, dial-up internet was still a thing. While cable internet was starting to make its presence known, dial-up internet was still in the majority of households at this time. And AOL and all that, and AIM. And yeah, I'm getting nostalgic for you guys right now, but I'm just trying to set the stage and set the table for the environment we were in, because I think it's important to point out that it was not known, at least I believe to the masses, that this was Stone Cold's last match. And that's what made it all the more surprise when it was his last match, at least from where I sat. And, I remember Jim Ross doing an interview after the match and saying that he knew it was Austin's last match, but he couldn't say anything, and it killed him, but he couldn't. And it was a sad moment. It was a moment that, again, I for a guy that came into the business and was so passionate about it and made me the biggest fan of the business, at least from probably in my entire school. And look, I graduated with a class of, what, 400 probably? And I was known for the guy that liked wrestling. And some did, some didn't like it. Some people made fun of you for it. I mean, it's just nonsensical stuff. If you guys know me, you know my instant comeback for those that like to poke fun at wrestling fans. And, you get a lot of that, especially in high school. So nonetheless, I was a big wrestling fan. It shaped my high school career. It shaped what I dressed up for Halloween. It shaped my personality to some degree, believe it or not. And not that I think I'm trying to be a wrestling personality, but that it just shapes certain parts of you. I mean, at that age, I started at age 12, right? From age 12 to 20, you're really freaking impressionable. So when you're that impressionable, you take the traits that you see and like and admire, and you try to translate them to the real world. And sometimes I did it literally. And believe it or not, I know I'm getting a little off topic, but a quick story is I did amateur wrestling in seventh and eighth grade. And for 2 weeks in ninth grade. So just as I went into high school, I continued amateur wrestling and didn't really sit my cup of tea. I actually went to football for one day. You guys, I think I've told you that before. It was literally one day of football in double sessions. And I just said, F this, they're not messing with my summer. They can call me when, school's back in session. But nonetheless, as I was doing the amateur wrestling in eighth grade, I was still a huge wrestling fan, right? I mean, in 98, 99, think about where we were. That was the peak of the Attitude Era. Things were blazing hot. Stone Cold was on top. He was the effing man. I mean, people can't comprehend in today's environment just how huge Stone Cold was. How big he was in 98, 99, 2000, 2001. People just don't know. Unless you lived it, it's hard to gauge and really have a full understanding of just how over Stone Cold Steve Austin was. It's almost unfathomable in 2019 because nobody has ever come close to approaching it. People say, oh, CM Punk, oh, Becky Lynch. No, no. They may have had a small degree of success compared to Stone Cold, and people attributed that because that was the closest that we came to feeling like that since Austin was on top. And I'm not taking anything away from guys and gals like that. Extremely successful. But Austin is in a stratosphere of his own. There's just no arguing that. Whether you liked him or didn't, it didn't matter because he was still the guy that was on top undeniably. And you also have to remember, too, as I mentioned, there was no social media, which not just means that you didn't get the inside information as much as you did now. Information wasn't as easily accessible or shared as quickly. The social media explosion that happened also, I think, completely killed kayfabe, right? And back then, you know, you didn't have these stars, wrestlers, going out there and publishing pictures of what they're doing on the weekend or hanging out with their opponent or, you know, whatever, backstage and waiting for their match. All this stuff that completely kills the believability in bringing you in emotionally. So there was also that benefactor of having no social media, right? So there was still that mystique. There was still that belief that, well, yeah, I know this is predetermined, but man, they're making me believe. That's what we want. We go to movies with the same preconceived notion, right? We all know what we're about to watch. It didn't actually happen, but we want to believe it did because it's more fun and it gets us emotionally engaged. That's how the human brain works. So back to my story. I was in wrestling practice, and I think it was eighth grade. Does it really matter? No. And I was, you know, wrestling with this guy, and we were just messing around, but we were kind of going at it. Like, we were practicing, but we were really trying to take each other down. And he had me pretty good, but he made the big mistake of putting his head near my shoulder. Like, you know, where my lats are, rather. So he was behind me. I was in front of him. His head was in a perfect place to deliver a stunner. You may ask, did I deliver the stunner? And the answer to that would be a resounding hell yes, I did. A real stunner. Like, I didn't try to pull any punches. Like, it was it was as real of a stunner as I could have made it. And it jarred him, and I got a 2.5 count, right? I almost pinned him. Unfortunately, he kicked out. But it was a real deal. It was a real stunner. It was just bizarre. I mean, yeah, and people who were watching wrestling knew what that was, and, you know, people were going nuts, right? I mean, it was just the guys that were in the class. It wasn't like I was, you know, in front of the audience when an actual match was going on with an opponent from another school. But you know, that's how ingrained wrestling was. I had the balls to deliver a real stunner to somebody. And you may say, oh my God, you're such a fool. Let's relax. We were on soft mats. I didn't kick him, you know, in the gut and just drop him from a standing position. We were already halfway down the way that we were positioned. And hey, I'm 12 or 13 years old. Give me a friggin' break. What did you do at 13, right? So, I mean, I'm sure that giving a stone cold stunner to your wrestling opponent isn't the worst thing that you've ever heard in your life. But that was just a small story of wrestling. And honestly, I think I delivered, this is so sad, but true. There's a true fact about myself. I actually delivered my first stone cold stunner on somebody before I got my first kiss. How about that? Let me just put my teenage life in perspective for you, at least my early teenage life. I dated a girl, the very first girl I ever dated, I brought home, right? And I'm talking, I was 13, 14. We'll leave names out of it because it just isn't worth it, just in case, right? But I brought the girl home, and my parents and one of my friends thought I was taking care of a sick girl. Yeah, that's a real thing. I mean, they weren't trying to be funny. They weren't trying to, say that you know, making fun of anybody. No. This girl didn't have a disability. No, nothing like that. Okay, for everybody that's sensitive right now, relax. They just thought I was taking care of a sick girl. Yeah. I didn't think she was that bad looking, but I don't know. I guess at 13, beggars can't be choosers. And I don't know. And actually, my first kiss was a truth or dare. It wasn't even a real kiss. It was a planned, because I knew the girl was next door. I was at my cousin's house, and I was like, ooh, that'd be cool to do a truth or dare. And what did I do? Yeah, so it was like a planned truth or dare, the most ridiculous thing ever. Yeah, I could tell you guys stories, but this is not what this is about. This is not about my life. This is about professional wrestling and just a small little sample of how Stone Cold has affected my life, and in especially in the most impressionable years of your young youth. And, you know, when you think that sometimes what you see on TV can be mimicked in real life, you learn pretty quickly. But as we age, of course, we get smarter in most cases, and we learn to take things from television and movies and not do exactly what they do, but maybe, you know, admire the traits that a character has, right? Or learn the essence of a story. You get a little bit more sophisticated and grown up. So anyway, let's get back to the professional wrestling talk here, and let's get back to WrestleMania 19. And WrestleMania 19, as I said, took place in Seattle, Washington on March 30th, 2003, and from Safeco Field, or 54,000 people in attendance. And the tagline was "Dare to Dream." Wow, I don't remember that. I really don't. So let me give you guys the card here. Beyond Austin Rock. We all know what that was. And that actually wasn't the main event. Think about that. Stone Cold and The Rock were not the main event of the show. Austin's final match and the best and biggest rival he ever had was not the main event. Think about that. I mean, just, it's insanity. You had Brock Lesnar defeat Kurt Angle in the final match. It was for the Undisputed Championship. We all remember that match for what? One move that almost killed Brock Lesnar, right? There were 10 matches on this show compared to, like, I don't know, was there 15 on today's WrestleMania? It's just too much. And in the promo to the WrestleMania here, they had Undertaker talking about how WrestleMania is the granddaddy of them all, which Vince doesn't like anymore because it makes the show sound old. Granddaddy. Good God, Vince. And how if you're on the card, it means you mean something. Just go back. It's the very first minute of the entire show. Undertaker says that. Can you apply that to today? The answer is no, you can't, because everybody gets on the show because everybody gets a prize. That's just how it's viewed. Everybody gets a prize. Everyone needs to get on the card and experience WrestleMania. It's BS. And, you know, look, I'm sure the performers have a different mentality towards that. They work all year. Oh, I'm on the road. Why can't I participate in the biggest main event or the biggest show of the entire year? Why can't I be on the card? The answer is you can. But do you deserve to? WrestleMania, unfortunately, has been redefined as everybody gets a turn. And it should be the complete opposite. But they want to make sure that the show runs as long as they can so that they have longer number of hours that viewers are watching the network, which ups the statistics of the number of viewers watching the network for longer, which makes the investors and financial people happy on Wall Street. And so they put everybody on the card to make a longer show at the sacrifice of actually making the show more important by putting the people on there who should be on there and the matches on there that should be on there, rather than just saying, let's make this as long as hell, right? But anyway, I think I'm going to get off that train. But let me give you guys a card rundown here. Chief Morley and Lance Storm with the Dudley Boys defeated Kane and Rob Van Dam. This was a tag team match for the World Tag Team Championship and ended in 7 minutes and 2 seconds. Second match on the card was Matt Hardy with Shannon Moore defeating Rey Mysterio for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. That match was 5 minutes and 37 seconds. Undertaker defeated The Big Show and A-Train in a one-on-two handicap match in just under 10 minutes. A somewhat forgettable Undertaker WrestleMania match, to be totally honest. Trish Stratus defeated Victoria with Steven Richards and Jazz in a triple threat for the Women's Championship in 7 minutes and 17 seconds. Then we had Team Angle, which consisted of Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. Hey, Shelton, y'all remember him, right? The one that is obsessed with some kind of fly that's in the room, whatever he's doing with his eyes now. They defeated Chris Benoit, Rhino, and Los Guerreros, which was Chavo Guerrero and Eddie Guerrero, in a triple threat match for the Tag Team Championship in 8 minutes and 48 seconds. Shawn Michaels defeated Chris Jericho in 22 minutes and 34 seconds. That's a match y'all should go back and watch. That is a match I remember was just so well done in story and the chemistry that those two had. Highly recommend. Triple H with Ric Flair defeated Booker T in a singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. A lot of racial undertones in this match. Just go back and research it. Not good. Not good stuff here. Not good stuff. In 18 minutes and 45 seconds, as I said. And you got to remember, too, Triple H was also in the match here, and he pedigreed his own wife because Stephanie had turned on him. And so, yes, Triple H pedigreed Stephanie after months of trying, and he finally got it here. Hulk Hogan defeated Mr. McMahon in a street fight in 20 minutes and 47 seconds. How did that go 20 minutes? Really? Oh, I mean, I guess it's Vince giving Vince time. From what I remember, and I did look at a little bit of the highlights of that match, it didn't look as terrible as it was because Hogan could still move around at that time. Vince could still somewhat move around at that time, as discombobulated as he is, even in his, quote, prime. It wasn't a complete train wreck, but there were some good moments in that match, and what I remember the most is not just Hogan winning, but it was Vince McMahon creeping over the ring apron, a bloodied Vince McMahon creeping over the ring apron with a lead pipe. One of the best and funniest things that Vince McMahon has ever done is that moment. I think it was about three quarters of the way through the match. They're both bloodied and he gets this evil look at his eyes, and it was a perfect camera shot, perfectly executed, hilarious and creepy, and just it was amazing. A 10 out of 10 look. It was great. So then we had, of course, The Rock defeating Stone Cold Steve Austin in a singles match here for the in 17 minutes and 55 seconds. And then we had Brock Lesnar defeating Kurt Angle in a WWE Championship match. And the stipulation here was, had Angle been counted out or disqualified, he would have lost the title. This was almost the longest match of the night, in 21 minutes and 7 seconds, only to be beaten out by Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho at 22 minutes. So from what I remember, maybe I'll do a throwback on that match too, but because there's a lot to talk about there, with not just Brock's botched shooting star press, but Kurt Angle basically taking his life into his own hands that night with a broken neck, risking paralysis and facing Brock Lesnar in that match. Which was just, this match was fascinating on so many levels, and the realism and all of that, that those two had true competitive nature, against one another. They were both amateur wrestlers. Yes, Brock never made it to the Olympics because he never tried to go for the Olympics. He was a 2-time NCAA champion, and we all know Kurt Angle's story being an Olympic gold medalist. So there's true competition there, and there was a lot of real things going on in the ring that, to the trained eye would be very, very obvious. And now that I'm talking about it, I probably should go back and watch after it's been, my God, I don't know how many years since I've seen that match. So, but we're going to talk about The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin here. So before I do, and we're going to get into some audio, of course, I got to let you guys listen to some of the clips, and we'll bring you along on that journey with me, which is always a blast. I do want to talk about something here, and I don't know how many of you out there are into fantasy football. I am a huge fantasy football fan. Like, I just did my draft today, and it is just a blast. And so it is football season, and if you guys didn't know, Antonio Brown is now a Raider. Le'Veon Bell is with the Jets, and Odell Beckham is in Cleveland. He left my Giants, which I'm not so sad about, but the one thing that hasn't changed is where I'm putting my money down on all the games. It's MyBookie. MyBookie is the absolute best place to bet on football every weekend. You can wager on college football, to the odds in the presidential election. MyBookie, it really does have something for absolutely everybody. It's fun for everyone. And I don't just mean that. Like, MyBookie is one of the best sites that you can go to if you are into the whole betting on things, especially fantasy football. I really recommend you guys go check it out. It has better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. And this year, MyBookie is hosting the first ever online handicapping super contest. Its first place is guaranteed to win at least $100,000, and it only costs $100 to enter. So think about that, guys. Think about how much, $100,000 for just $100 to enter. And all you have to do is pick five NFL teams against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. So very simple. So this is the thing, guys. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's proven. I mean, MyBookie is a powerhouse in this industry. So I don't just give you guys, just stuff that I would never use myself or have never used. That's why MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, and they pay. MyBookie has live in-game betting on every NFL game, and they've got the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys and gals out there, you can even bet on the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. So check this out. And up to $1,000 first deposit bonus. Double your first deposit. The key here is, guys, don't forget to do this. Use the promo code WWE to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code WWE when you're creating the account, and that's how you claim your bonus. You don't get your bonus unless you put my promo code in of WWE. It's easy. You bet, you win, and you get paid. If you guys want to hear a different perspective on the landscape of professional wrestling, then go check out the J3X Show. The J3X Show is a wrestling podcast that's on all podcast hosting sites like Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. So if you want a fun but knowledgeable podcast to listen to at work or wherever, then go follow the J3X Show. All right, guys, and let's get to some of the audio. And I want to jump right into Stone Cold's entrance, and I want you to listen to Jim Ross's commentary and his thoughts on when Austin is walking down to the ramp here. It's now, looking back, hindsight being 2020, we can hear the fact that, hey, Jim Ross knew. Jim Ross was one of the only few that knew that this was Austin's last match. You can hear it in his voice and the way that he talks about Stone Cold and tries to wrap up his career and put as much credibility and as much I guess honor into Austin's career as he possibly can here. So here's some of the audio, and take a listen, and we'll continue on this journey here. And so that's just the entrance, and this is, again, when you hear the comments made by Jim Ross, that this is all he's ever wanted to do, this is his life, this is his destiny. I remember in the moment hearing that going, that's kind of weird. That's kind of weird from Jim. Like, he's getting pretty deep on us right now. Like, why are we getting deep in here? Knowing that this would be the soundtrack to Austin's final match, clearly you'd want to make some kind of wrap-up statements and really put the light in Austin's camp as much as you could, and Jim Ross did. And it was, looking back, it's pretty clear that he knew, and he did. So it was a great entrance, a great commentary, as always, by Jim Ross, who makes anything feel important. And the kicker is, and I didn't mention this, that the night before, Austin spent the entire night in the hospital, dehydrated. His heart was pounding out of his chest, and he chalked it up to stress and drinking too many of those energy drinks and coffee and not hydrated enough. So he spent the entire night in the hospital not knowing if he was going to be able to compete the next day. And again, it's 16 years ago, and some of you may or may not know that, but it's pretty amazing that they were able to put on that kind of performance. Awesome, specifically when you're in the night, you're in the hospital the entire night, right? I mean, he's getting IV fluids pumped into him and just didn't know. He thought he was having a heart attack. So it's just crazy. I mean, when you think about how much you have to be drinking in terms of those energy drinks to do that to yourself and stressing out and everything else and probably all the emotional baggage that goes with the fact that, hey, tomorrow's it. Tomorrow is the final time that I will be out there in a true competitive nature, and I'm hanging up the boots after tomorrow. I mean, am I a little bit sad that he didn't make an announcement that it's his final match? I don't know. Yes and no. I guess selfishly, yes. I would like him to have given the fans a heads up, but I, at the same time, understand and respect why he didn't. He didn't want this big hoo-ha about it. He just wanted to go off into the sunset under his own terms, not put the huge expectations on himself and on the match that would be his final match if it was advertised as such. But did they miss out on some money? Probably. They probably did. Not giving Vince McMahon a heads up on this is my final match, right? I mean, think about what they could have done with that. But let's continue here on into the match, and let's talk about a little bit after the entrance, and we'll continue.
And just like Snake Eyes, inside that body beats the heart of an animal, a wrestling animal.
Watch it, Rocky, right behind you.
And the great one, the great third generation
take it off,
star,
no, take it off.
Is up.
Oh, look at the Rock. There you go.
So I mean, each of these men used their own finishers against him. Austin used the Rock Bottom, and then the Rock used the Stunner. And they're going in here to their final sequence, their finishing sequence. And let's just let you guys listen to this. And that was a stunner that only the Rock could sell. I mean, he would oversell it almost comedically, but it was believable, if that makes sense. And when Austin hit the stunner, I didn't think that was it. At this moment, I was thinking, okay, you just have to deliver one more. And obviously, that didn't happen. But let's continue the journey here down the path of Austin's final match. And the Rock going into the closing sequence of this match. And that was Austin kicking out of the first Rock Bottom. And remember, this is an era in which kicking out of finishers was not really commonplace. And it felt special still. It still felt special when you had people kick out of finishers. But let's continue down the line here, and let's listen to what happens.
Come on, Austin kicked out.
So Austin kicks out of two Rock Bottoms. At this point, I'm thinking, all right, now you got to have Austin retaliate with a stunner. Then, you know, he gets the win and we move all on happy and, you know, Austin drinks some beers. Little did I know, obviously, that this was Austin's last match. So, again, I was losing my mind. My friends were losing their minds. I had a lot of Rock fans that hated Stone Cold. They were never really on board with the whole what thing or the Austin character. So I was a bit alone in this situation, but still, it was a lot of fun sitting there and we were yelling and screaming and everything else. And when he kicked out of that second Rock Bottom, it was bliss for me, because you always know when somebody kicks out of a finish, they're about to deliver their own finish. And so to me, this was tit for tat and we were about to get a Stone Cold Stunner. Little did I know that that was far from the actual finish of the match. And let's listen to the actual finish and see what happens.
With his heart racing, with his guts in knots.
You better stay
Austin
down on...
trying to get up.
Stay down on the mat, Austin. You'll have a shorter distance to fall after you get this Rock Bottom.
Austin's up somehow, some way. And the Rock, is he going to do it? Not the third time.
The third time's a charm. Big one.
So there you have it. The Rock comes out and defeats Stone Cold Steve Austin for the first time. As you know, they met at 15, 17, and now 19, and 19 was their final encounter, and ending with The Rock victorious over Stone Cold Steve Austin, which, I mean, I was not happy. I was, The Rock was heel also at this point. The fans had turned on him, and, you know, he was the Hollywood version of himself and just going to the nth degree to be obnoxious. It was great stuff. I mean, you got to give The Rock credit here for being an obnoxious SOB, and he was. He did a good job. I mean, you heard some cheers from the fans. I mean, there are some Rock fans. He's just so entertaining that no matter what he says, sometimes you just continue to be a fan of that individual. It just doesn't matter. It's just too entertaining. And that was the case with The Rock, but he played a good heel. And so I was always in the camp of Austin, even when it was at WrestleMania 17, when there was babyface versus babyface, and you had Austin, you know, aligning himself with Vince. I was disappointed, but I was still in the camp of Austin, and having him not stun McMahon at the end was a bit disconcerting. And even Stone Cold Steve Austin said that that was one regret that he had, that he wished he had delivered the stunner to Vince, even though the plan was to have him turn heel, but to have him just stun Vince. And I agree. I mean, I still expected it, and I expected it even the next night on Raw, which I remember vividly, but that's another story for another time. This is about WrestleMania 19, and The Rock sat in the ring and told Stone Cold that, you know, thank you, don't know how much this means to me, all this kind of stuff that was revealed later. And it was emotional. I mean, you know, even having the Jim Ross on commentary just, again, adds so much to the story. Because guess what? They're focused on what's going on in the ring. In the ring is where the stories are told, and that's what makes a difference versus today's product. That not just because you don't sound like Jim Ross, but because they're not talking about what's going on in the ring. They're talking about nonsensical crap that has nothing to do with what's going on in the ring. And it's disrespectful to the guys and gals that are in the ring to do ignore holds, to not allow their story in the ring that they're telling to be told in their voice, the voice that's being heard by millions of people. And that's the difference here, is that unless you're going to be a narrator, you shouldn't be in the commentary position. And unfortunately, that position has been rethought by Vince McMahon and management as the guy that just kind of is there to tell stories and, you know, be entertaining and, you know, tell the backstory, when rather than actually, you know, just call what the hell they're seeing, call what's in the ring. You know, do you have sports commentators, baseball, football, whatever, talk about things that are going on outside of that particular sport. I mean, you may hear a quick backstory during dull moments of the pitcher standing there and positioning himself, and you know the batter steps out of the batter's box, and you hear different things about what was going on during that day or the interview that was held or some whatever. Or maybe they give you history between that pitcher and that particular batter. That's fine. But you don't do it during the actual action of the game. You can do it during the downtime. Don't do it during the actual action when I'm watching. If you're not engaged, how am I supposed to be? So that's, I mean, again, that's, again, a different era. And I understand that. And if Jim Ross's voice is just iconic, and he had a talent that was, I think, surpassed more anybody that ever lived in terms of announcing. So he had that going for him, but also in the era of the belief that you call what's in the ring. And so there was that too. And but props to Rock, props to Austin on that match. Was it their best match? No, I still think WrestleMania 17 was their best match. But this was more of an emotional end to a career, an emotional story being told here that we didn't know we were being told until it came out afterwards. So it was a very emotional match for Austin, as I'd imagine, and a very entertaining match for every fan in attendance and at home. And for those of you Rock fans that night, you were elated. For Austin fans, we were visibly disappointed. And it was great. And yeah, I had nothing else to say about that. So, oh, and one little quick final note. Austin today actually picked the greatest stunner seller in history. He spoke with KFC Radio, where he revealed who the best seller of his stunner was. So here's what he said, quote, "Yeah, The Rock is my favorite sell of all time, because who would have figured that guy, I hit him with that damn stunner, and half the time I'd have to watch out because he'd crash over me. And The Rock, I mean, he's always been like 275, and when his legs or whatever careened off the ropes and you hit and hit you in the head, it's like, God damn, that hurts. And who would have thought then, as he was flip-flopping around the ring for a stunner, that now, today as we speak, he's the biggest movie star in the history of the world. You're welcome, The Rock." So Austin has picked his favorite stunner seller of all time, and that would be The Rock. I would agree. It was just, he was so smooth with it, the way The Rock sold it. He would flip over with his head and he'd bounce his legs off the rope. We all remember how it was sold. Just perfect. It was great stuff. Great stuff. I love the way he sold it. You could argue, he's overselling it, but not really, right? Because The Rock was all in with it. I mean, the way The Rock would sell it, he looks like he got shot. I mean, it was just beautiful the way The Rock would sell the stunner. So, well, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. One quick announcement I would like to make, because I didn't make it at the top of the show. I got right into my just sometimes sad state of affairs as an early teenager and a wrestling fan, was we have now an AEW and an NXT podcast. Now, here's how it's going to work. This show may not be on 6 days a week in terms of like, show Monday, a show Tuesday, a show Wednesday, only day off is Saturday. What's going to happen is, starting with the weekly AEW podcast in October, we're going to have a weekly show. Until that time, only with the pay-per-view that's going to be happening and is going to, that's when it's going to happen. We can't do a weekly show until there's weekly content to talk about. With NXT, the NXT podcast will start weekly, hopefully this week. And the AEW podcast should be coming out very, very shortly for the very first episode. I just need to get a jingle in place, if you will, get someone to create that for the show. And then we'll be off and running with the NXT and AEW podcast. So, yeah, this show is actually going to have 6 episodes a week starting in October. 6. It's going to be crazy. So 4 of them will be me. 2 of them will be my very talented co-hosts. And I announced who they were on my Twitter feed yesterday at the WWE podcast. So check out them. Give them a follow. And I think you guys will enjoy it. It also gives me a break. And it gives you another voice or two to listen to other than myself. So check out the website, too, at wwepodcast.com, where you have all these shows. And you get all the new articles coming up every single week talking about just topics all over the place. So check that out. And you get to also check us out anywhere that podcasts live. And so that's a good thing. If you don't like ads, too, if you don't like the ads, you're like, oh, my God, the ads. Easy way to fix it is head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. And you get every single show ever that I've ever done for just a dollar. And it's ad free, which is always a good thing. Get rid of all the ads for a dollar. So, alrighty. Well, guys, I'm on my way out here. I'll be back on Tuesday with my Raw review show and hopefully sneak in an AEW show as well. Not with me, but with my new co-host who's going to be doing his own show. I will not be joining him for that particular one, but he is a new contributor to the show, Zach Perez, who will be doing the AEW show. So, guys, keep your ears peeled. There's a lot of audio coming. This show is expanding, and I'm very thankful for everybody who is a contributor to the show. It's a big deal, and I think you're gonna be pleasantly surprised with how quickly and how much this show grows. It's a good thing. So, but thank you to all the fans and all the listeners. That's how this show grows, is because of you guys. So, all right, I'm out of here. You guys enjoy your night, morning, evening, whatever. And I will see you on Tuesday. Until then, I'll talk to you next time.